Wednesday nights, we've been talking about managing our emotions, and boy, we live in such an emotional world. So many people are just driven by their emotions, and they live by their emotions, and they can't seem to function without being emotionally involved in something. And so we've been talking about that. We've talked about a lot of them. Last week, we looked at frustration. We saw some interesting stories last week about frustration. We saw that God became frustrated. Who can tell me who God was frustrated with last week? Moses, that's right. He was talking about Moses. Moses just kept giving him excuse after excuse after excuse. And so God became very frustrated. God had to bring in another person to help Moses because Moses, he said, you can do this, Moses. Moses said, I can't. He said, yes, you can. No, I can't. Who was it that he had to bring in to be his mouth? Aaron. He had to bring in Aaron. And we saw that was such a difficult thing and such a sad thing really for Aaron, because at the very end we saw that Moses was the one who became frustrated with God's people. He became frustrated with God's people because they were griping all the time and murmuring all the time. But here was the point of the whole thing last week. So in God's frustration, he had choices, but he chose to stay with Moses. He said, I'm not going to give up on Moses. Moses is still the man that I've chosen. And let's face it, when God makes a decision, it's always the right one. Right? So God doesn't ever have to second guess himself like we do. But he said, no, I'm going to stay with Moses. I'm going to stick with him. I'm going to work with him. I'll bring him some help. But yet that frustration, because he brought Aaron into it later on when Moses became frustrated, how did he respond? He responded and he kind of out of emotion, didn't he? His frustration got the better of him. He ended up striking a rock instead of speaking to the rock the way God said to. And that one act of frustration cost him what? The promised land. Think about this. The last 40 years of Moses' life, he spent in the wilderness, in the desert, walking around, traveling around from place to place temporarily with a bunch of griping, murmuring, and frankly, dying people. All the old people were dying off and the young people were left. He spent the last 40 years of his life doing that, got right to the promised land. He could see the promised land, but he didn't get to go in because of that one act of where he allowed his frustration to get the better of him. And he didn't pay attention to the details. So kind of what we learned from all that and what we were trying to learn for ourselves is that frustration is a part of life, yes? God gets frustrated. People get frustrated, leaders get frustrated, followers get frustrated, kids get frustrated, parents get frustrated. But when we get in that condition, when we know we're in a time of great frustration, that is not the time to act. That's the time to step back and get a hold of God and pay attention to details and make sure we're doing the things that God told us to do. Because again, it's a very sad thing that one bad move on Moses' part cost him the promised land. I can't imagine that he's not sitting up in heaven going, man, I can't believe I did that. I mean, wouldn't we be doing that? It's like, oh, stupid. Why did I do that? So tonight, then, we want to talk about another emotion. I want to shift gears now. I want to get away from the negative emotions or kind of negative emotions. Some can be both, and move to something that I believe we all want. And it's the word you see there in front of you, contentment. Contentment. Contentment is kind of an opposite of frustration. You know, contentment is sort of the positive side. You know, when we're not frustrated about something, when we're not upset about something, when we're not concerned about something, we're just simply content. So let's begin the same way that we've begun many of these others. I'm going to ask you to tell me when you see the word contentment, tell me what that means. Define it or describe it. Tana? Peace. I think peace is probably the first word that comes to my mind too.
Satisfied.
Satisfied is a great word. Satisfied. Being at peace. Yes, Teresa?
Confident.
Confident.
It's going to be okay no matter what.
Okay. So you're, you know what? And I like the word Godfident for that, because it's kind of like, it's that confident, but it's like, yeah, it's up to God. I'm good either way, God. What a great place to be in, huh? Wouldn't that be an amazing place to live all of our lives? It's like, you know what? Whatever God decides, I'm okay with that. If he decides it's cancer, I'm okay with it. Don't like it, but I'm okay with it. If he decides, you know, I've got a financial reversal coming, you know, if I've got this, you know, what a great place to be in if we could get to that place in our lives. Anybody else? Contentment. Okay, so let me ask you this, as we start to sort of tease this out a little bit and get a little bit more information here. So how is contentment different from happiness?
Well, you don't have to be happy about a situation to be content,
man. Explain further. He said you don't have to be happy about a situation to be content. How are they different?
Well, just like you gave the example of whether it's cancer or not. Well, if it is cancer, it doesn't mean you have to do jumping jacks and backflips.
Okay. So that's not going to be, nobody's going to be happy about that. Okay, there you go. And that's where he's at. So happiness is a, they really like you. Cancer, so happiness is an up emotion, right? Happiness is up here. Contentment is not up here. Contentment is, I'm okay. Okay, so it is different from happiness. So the question we really want to look at tonight, and what we're going to look first at what the Apostle Paul had to say. When I've said this, I'll bet there are many of you, you've already gone several places in your mind. Some of you that know your Bible, you've already gone to the book of Philippians probably. You know, you've gone to some different places in your mind. So we're going to get there, and we're going to look at what the Apostle Paul had to say. But what I want to really focus on tonight is, so what really is the key to being content? When we talk about being okay, being at peace with my life, being at peace with my family, being at peace with my job, being at peace with the things that I have. What is that? Well, let's take a look at something the Apostle Paul said. I think it's much deeper than we would probably give it credit for on a surface reading. Philippians chapter 4, verse number 11. Paul wrote this. He said, he's talking to the Philippians. He's thanking them for giving, sending him some help. He said, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have, look at the next word, learned. I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. Now, the reason I think this is a really profound statement that he makes is not so much that he's basically saying, look, I can be content anywhere. I can be content. You know, he goes on to say, he said, look, I know what it feels like to be exalted. I know what it feels like to be abased. He said, I know what it feels like to be treated well. I know what it feels like to be mistreated. He said, I know what it feels like to be hungry. I know what it feels like to be full. So he's talking about all these different contrasting things. But what I think is so interesting is the fact that he said he has learned to do it. Right? So if it's something that can be learned, then that means it's not so much dependent upon the state that he's in, but it's something that he's learned to do in that state. So, yeah, it's not natural. It's not just going to happen. It's something that he has learned, and we want Paul to teach us, yes? We want Paul to tell us, what do you do? What have you done? What is it that you have learned so that you can be at peace in your soul? And that's kind of where we're gonna go tonight. So, for our purposes tonight, I'm gonna give you. You have given some great words about contentment. You've defined what it is very, very well. I'm gonna give you a working definition that we're gonna go from tonight. All right. So just allow me. I'm not saying it's the only definition. I'm not saying it's the best definition. I'm just gonna tell you what I believe contentment really is in a definition form. And we're going to work from that then as we begin to study some scripture passages. So here's what I believe contentment is. Contentment is what we feel when our reality meets our expectations. When my reality meets my expectations, I'm content. So, you know, you get a paycheck on Friday or sometime like that. So let's say you get a paycheck. Let's just pretend for a minute. You know, back in the days when they actually wrote something called checks, they were pieces of paper, and you know that you actually got, and you had to take it to the bank. So if you know when you get a paycheck on Friday, you are content. First of all, if you got that paycheck, right, because you expected to get it, and you got it, and it's for the amount that you expected, right? So you're content. You're not jumping, you know, like Ben said, you're not doing jumping jack, you're not celebrating, you're not excited, because that's what you expected, right? So when reality meets expectations, that results in contentment. Okay, let's go to the next thing though. But when reality falls short of expectations, we call that disappointment. So when my reality, let's say you expected your check on Friday, and Friday came around, your boss went home and said, "See ya, I'm going to the lakes this weekend, I'll see you on Tuesday." How you doing? You're disappointed, right? You're not happy, maybe even angry, because you expected that paycheck. What if you got the paycheck, but it's for half of what you expected? Disappointed, right? I think a lot of people have experienced that here in the last few months. And so that's disappointment. All right. So we're talking about contentment now. So when reality meets expectations, we're content. When it falls short, we're disappointed. And then when it exceeds expectations, all right, if you get your paycheck on Friday and you notice your boss has put in, a 50% bonus in your check. Now what are you? Now you're joyous, you're happy, right? So really contentment is a function of reality meeting our expectations. Now, here's kind of what we're going to be thinking about tonight then. So when you think about this, there are parts of this we can control and parts of this we can't control. Right? So if we're going to start thinking about, if we're going to start asking Paul, how do you manage to be content? Well, my guess is Paul's going to say, well, there's going to be some realities that happen, and there's going to be some expectations that I create. And how those two things play out is going to determine whether or not I'm content. And guess what? That's how it's going to play out in our lives as well. So, again, we could look at a lot of illustrations, but I want to look at a couple of illustrations just so we get a good idea of how this works. So we have parents in the room. All right, let's see. Victoria, you have a teenage daughter, and Teresa, you have almost a teenage daughter. So when you tell your children, you all have elementary age children, and you have elementary age children, Mauricio. So when you tell that you have a teen son, all right. So now picture for a minute, you tell your child, your teenager, that you expect them to clean their rooms. Okay, go clean your room. Now you have made a statement about something. Do you have an expectation in your mind, Victoria? Be honest. We won't tell Elizabeth what you say. Now think about it. Or Julia. Do you have an expectation in your mind? When you say, I want you to clean your room, do you have something that you expect that room to look like when it's done? Sure you do. Do you think that what you see in your mind is maybe the same thing that they see in their minds? They may not be. So we already have a situation where you have two different people. They hear the same words, but their expectations may be completely different, right? You know, I mean, if you told Kelly to go clean his room, you have an expectation, probably not what his is. So what happens then? All right, so when you go to check on them later on, when you go to check on Haley, or you go to check on Elizabeth or Julia, and you go to check on Mike, you go to see what they did, there are three possibilities, right? There are three possibilities. When you go to, you make Ben and Diana clean their room? Okay, so you have an expectation. They have a certain picture in their minds. When you go to check on that room, when you go to... and that's great, provided that they are paying attention. He said, oh, no, yeah, I know. Oh, they're paying attention, all right. So you have this expectation. You go and you take a look. Now, if it's, here's the funny thing. If your expectation is for that room to be spotless, it might be. It could be. It could be. If you expect that room to be spotless, now listen, now get this. This is important, though. If you expect that room to be spotless, what is your best case scenario in this? Contentment. You have no chance at joy. Again, I'm not saying that you're wrong to do it. I'm just saying we have to understand if our expectation is here and there's no way to go above that, the best you can do is to be content. And after that, and really, there's like one level that you're content. Everything below it is what?
Disappointment.
Disappointment. And you know, there are some people who live their lives like this. There are some of us that we're all kind of individualistic about the areas which we demand perfection, right? But if we do that, we have to understand this person is not, you know, this person has no chance to make me happy. This person can only make me content if they're perfect. And everything below that is disappointment. All right, so again, you get this. So now, if you have reasonable expectations, let's just say you go in, let's just say you have low expectations. Okay, is that more realistic? So you're going in, and for you, you're saying, go clean your room, and you're just hoping that there's no dead animals in there. For you, that's like, okay, that's good enough. But you go in, and it's actually pretty tidy, and it smells decent, then you're happy. So again, and I'm not saying either one's right or wrong. I'm just simply saying that there's all kinds of wiggle room in all of that, isn't there? There's wiggle room in our expectations. Sometimes you can have expectations that are here. Somebody only does a halfway job, but you're happy. Whereas if you have high expectations and somebody, now if you have high expectations and somebody still beats that, you're ecstatic. So we've got all this play in this dynamic, in this psychology that we all sort of know, but we don't ever stop and think about it. We don't ever stop and put words to it. So the Apostle Paul did put words to it. The Apostle Paul said, I have learned in whatever state that I'm in, I've learned how to find contentment in that. So that's what we're going to kind of take a look at tonight. So how can we use this to be more content? Well, let me just ask you, so which of these factors, can we go back to the other thing, please? Thank you. And so which of these words up here do we have control over? Do we have control over the reality of most things? Do you have control over what your boss does? Do you have control over what the president does, what the governor does, what your neighbor does, what your kids do? Yeah, some. But what do we have control over? We have control over our expectations. Now, again, before I get into this, don't think that I am saying set your expectations low. I think we ought to put our expectations at a good place. At a good place. But my point is, we can control our expectations. We can't control contentment, disappointment, and joy directly. What we can control is expectations. Then, when reality happens, it determines contentment, disappointment, or joy. So let's take a look at an illustration. Let's try to learn from a story that Jesus told. So Matthew chapter 20, we have a long story here that Jesus is going to tell. We're going to actually read through the story, and then we're going to break it down, and you're going to help me to sort of help us all to figure out how does the psychology of this thing of expectations, contentment, how does all this come together? Matthew chapter 20, verse 1. Here we go. Jesus telling the story. He said, "For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard." That was called day laborers. They basically would show up in the middle of town if somebody needed work. You know, if Alan, if you've got a big job coming up, you know, and you've got three guys on your regular payroll, but this is a big job and you need four more, you would go into the town square and you would say, you, and you, come on with me and I'll pay you. Okay, that's kind of how it worked. They would just show up and hope that an employer would come and hire them. Verse 2. "And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day." Now, this is a King James word. That doesn't mean a penny a day. Don't think, man, what a cheapskate. That was probably a normal day's wage. Okay? 16 cents. So back 2,000 years ago, 16 cents was probably pretty good money. That's probably pretty good money. That's 2 cents an hour, and that's probably not bad money back in those days. All right, so here we go. So he, but here's the thing. He agreed with them. They made a deal. So, Tom, I'll pay you a penny a day. You come work for me, yes? Yeah. Deal. All right, so Tom comes and works. It's early in the morning. All right, so verse number, now, by the way, time out. I'm sorry. Go back. So what should the expectations be on both sides now? There's been a deal struck. Tom has agreed to work for me, so what should his expectation be? He's going to get a penny. End of the day, he gets a penny. What should my expectation be? Yeah, I get a day of work. Right. So we both agreed. He works all day. I give him a penny. We're on the same page. Okay? And we're both good with it. Right? We're both in agreement. We're good with that. We're okay. We are, at this point, we have set an expectation level. Right? Now, we're not content yet because the day's not done. I haven't seen if he's going to work a full day or if he's going to be lazy or if he's going to go above board. And he hasn't seen the penny yet. So right now we have just simply set expectations, kind of like we do with one another, like you parents do with your children, kind of like you do with your boss, like we do with our friends, like we do with ministry partners, all these things. We all have these kind of these agreements that we all have. So we have these expectation levels. Let's move on now. Verse 3. He went out about the third hour. We believe this is probably a 6 a.m. deal, daylight. And this is probably a 9 a.m. deal. Again, depends on which commentator you listen to. But let's just go with that for now. So it's 9 a.m., third hour. He saw others standing idle in the marketplace. So the boss is passing back through town, and he sees these three guys right back here sitting around smoking weed, drinking cerveza. The three amigos, and he says, what are you doing? Why are you all just sitting there doing nothing? You should be working right now. Verse 4. So he said, go into the vineyard, and now watch this. Here's where it gets different. Whatsoever is right, I will give you. And then they went out and they started working. Now what do we have in terms of an expectation? Yeah, you know, this is kind of a tough one, right? It's ambiguous. There has not been a clear expectation made. Basically, it's whatever is right, I'll pay you. Now, you know, so that's going to be open for interpretation by them. I mean, a penny's clear, right? You know exactly what I promised you. And I know exactly what he promised me. He's going to work from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. That's how it works. But these guys, there's kind of a, it's not real sure what the expectations should be. Let's go on. Verse 5. He went out about the sixth and the ninth hour and did likewise. So throughout the course of the day, he's going out. So now it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He did likewise, you know, and he's hiring people. So he's finding more people sitting around. He says the same thing to them. Hey, whatever's right, I'll pay you. Just go work. And they go out and work. So obviously we have a situation here where Tom's working all day long. He's going to work a 12-hour shift. These guys back here, they're going to work a 9-hour shift. The next group's going to work 6 hours. The next group's going to work 3 hours. Verse 6. And about the 11th hour, assuming it's a 5 o'clock deal, so now he comes and he finds some others standing idle. And he says, why do you stand here all day idle? You've been here all day. Go work. Now, it's an hour away from quitting time, right? So by the time he travels to where the vineyard is and kind of gets trained and gets started, there's like no time for him to get much of anything done, but yet the boss said, go work. So he goes. Now, that's the story, all right? So that's Jesus has laid this out. And, you know, we look at this thing, and so there's really these expectations are very clear at the beginning. The rest of them are very, very ambiguous. So let's move on then. So verse number, let's just keep reading. Verse 7, let's just read the whole story. And they said unto him, because no man's hired us, he said, go also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that ye shall receive. Okay, verse 8. So when evening was come, all right, so now it's quitting time. The Lord of the vineyard said to his steward, he said, call the laborers and give them their hire. So Ben goes and calls all the laborers, but notice the master said, begin with the last and make the first. So not only did Tom was the first one out to work, but now he's the last one going to get paid. Okay? Now, there's a spiritual side to this parable that we can talk about, but right now we're just sort of looking at this thing of expectations and what's going to happen, you know, and how do those expectations change our level of contentment or disappointment or joy? So Ben calls the Leibers. He begins with the first. So he goes to Keith first. And let's take a look. Verse 9. When they came that were hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. So he pays him a penny. bad example. Not the guy to send out there. But he does. That's what he paid. He paid him a penny. Right? So that's verse 9. Verse 10. But when the first came, so he goes through all of these. So he goes and he gets these next people, then the next group. He gets these three guys back here that work 9 hours. He gave them a penny. Now, they're all right there watching, right? They're all seeing this. This is a tough story, by the way. This is one of those parables that Jesus told that's like, okay, Jesus, I know you're right, but man, I just don't know that I'm not okay with this. See, there's actually a spiritual side to this. He's actually talking to Jews. He's preparing them for a time when there's going to come a group of people called Gentiles who are going to get into heaven and do nothing for it other than trust Jesus, other than be at the 11th hour and say, yeah, if you'll let me go, if you'll invite me in at this late hour and I don't have to do all these rules, I don't have to follow these 613 laws that these guys have been following. Yeah, that's a great deal. See, Jesus was preparing them. But let's get back to this story. So now we have these expectations. All right, so the other laborers saw everything that's been going on. Now, what do you think is happening in Tom right now? So Tom sees that he got a penny. You know, Tom sees grudgingly Ben gave him a penny. Okay. I'm only doing this because I have to. It's not because you deserve it. If I had my way. So, and then he watches the next group get a penny. And the next group. Now, what's happening in his mind, do you think? What's happening? Is he sitting there saying, yeah, okay, you know, I agreed for a penny. I'm just, you know, holding out here. I'll get my penny here, and I'm going to get home and get the wife, and we're going to go to Steak and Shake. Is that what he's doing? You can get a burger for half a penny, or you know, I don't know, like a tenth of a penny or something. So, but what's going on? Seriously, if you were Tom, what would you be thinking? You could go that route. You know, he could say, man, I should have just hung out and done nothing. I should do like these people are that are sitting home right now, collecting half their paycheck from their employer and $600 a week from the president, and doing nothing. You know, they could be doing that. What's another route he could go? What else could be going on in his mind? He could be thinking, okay, wait a minute. He got a penny for working not even an hour. I'm only going to get a penny. Yeah, he could already assume that he's going to be treated unfairly. He's disappointed. But wait, he was perfectly content earlier. Now, what does go on in his... Okay, what is the third option? What else could he do, though? He could actually take his expectations and do what? He could be saying, oh, cool. He's giving him a penny? That means he must be going to give me a bunch. I must be getting, you know, like 12 pennies, 11 pennies. See, he could adjust his expectations. And what's going to happen? He's going to get really, really disappointed. Let's see what happens. Let's move on. So, verse 11. And when they had received it, they murmured. So he got the penny. I'm sorry. Did I read verse? I didn't read verse 10, did I? Go back to verse 10, please. I'm doing a terrible job with you tonight. Sorry. And when the first came, they supposed they should have received more. See, that's what he thought. He thought, I should receive more. And they likewise received a penny. He got the same thing this guy got. And when they had received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house. In other words, he started griping. So he's griping to Ben, right? He's griping to Ben because Ben's the one paying him. And he's, you know, wrong move. But he's saying, look, we should have gotten more. I deserve more because I worked all. And he's right. Look at verse 12. Look at verse 12, what he says. And he says it kind of correctly. Verse number 12. Saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and you have made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. I think he put a 12-hour shift in the heat of the day. We can kind of understand, right? I mean, can you kind of feel for him? It's not like he's telling something that's untrue either. He's telling the truth. So, but he's got this serious conflict now within him. So you know, it's kind of like, I would liken this unto, I don't know if any of you, if this is your work situation, but there are some of you, well, it probably is for like public school teachers, okay? School teachers. Teachers are salaried. But you know, there are some teachers, they work hard, and some teachers don't work hard. Did you ever work anywhere, Bill, when you were working and people would you know, they'd show up late, they'd show up, you know, they just didn't do the, you know. It can happen like that, right? Somebody on salary, you got two people on salary, and one's working real hard, and one's just not doing much of anything. They come when they want to, they go when they want to. There's a dynamic there, right? And there's this feeling of something's not, you know, this is not fair. So now, when this happens, so what really are we dealing with here? We're dealing with expectations, and we're dealing with reality. But there's a third variable that has now come into the picture that is greatly affecting his ability to be content. And it's all of ours. What is that third factor that's coming in now? Anger is a result of this third factor. Anger is, what is happening? There's something that is taking place, and Tom's the one doing it. He's doing something that is affecting his reality. The reality is what it is. It's affecting his expectations, and it's basically caused him to go from being content to uncontent. What is it? Yeah, it's called comparison. Comparison, exactly. It's called comparison. So what Tom has done, and you know, and again, it would have been great if all that would have been done in private. You know, if that had been done in private, if Ben had just been a decent guy and just gone over and just paid him, instead of making a big deal about it, instead of making it so public. No, the boss made it public, right? But if it had all been done private, he would have been fine, because you wouldn't have any idea what he got paid, would you? And you'd be fine, because you got what you're expecting. You'd be content. But now comparison is brought in to the mix. And comparison is the thing that is causing everything to go wrong now for Tom. Comparison is making Keith ecstatic until the guilt takes over. Dude, you need to give him some money, man. I'm just telling you, before you leave tonight, you need to give Tom some money. Give it to Ben. Ben will give it to him. Ben will like you again, too. So, what do you see my point? You see the point here? So this comparison thing is this factor that comes in. And does this not come into play in so many parts of our lives? Tell me about your Christmas gift buying drama.
I was on Amazon. Yeah. That's not the way I took my lightning deal.
Okay. So you've got these in-laws and these in-laws. Watch. You got in-laws on his side and on her side, right? What do you feel like you have to do? You have to make it equal. You have to make it equal. You got this kid and this kid. How many of you actually, do you have to count gifts? You couldn't hear it. Ben said, no, there's always one you like better. Look, right? This is drama in our lives, isn't it? We have these families that don't feel like they're being treated. Wait until grandma dies. When grandma dies, the whole family has an expectation. There's these expectations. There's these. This it becomes a really bad situation, right? I mean, a will is read, and everybody knows what everybody got. Comparison preys upon the worst in all of us. It really does. So here's the situation with this. So we have this new variable called comparison. Let's go verse 13. Let's finish this story here. So the boss then goes back but he answered one of them and he said, "Friend, I didn't do you any wrong. Did you not agree with me for a penny?" So he is stating there. Now, does that mean anything at all to Tom right now? No, it's done, right? That conversation they had early in the morning, that's all gone away. He was perfectly content until there was a comparison made. You know, it's kind of like if you, let's say you had three children, right, Laura? You have three children. If when your kids were 7, 8, 10 in that range, and you said, they came home from school and you said, "I made a cake, I'm going to give you each a piece." Are they all happy? Yes or no? What are you trying to say about Laura's cooking? What is your problem? Are you trying to say she can't make a cake? Answer me when I talk to you. Are they happy? Why? They weren't expecting a cake. See, already they were expecting to come home and have carrots or something, but there's a cake. So they're happy. Now, Laura cuts the cake and she puts a piece in front of Karen. And Karen's happy. Until Laura cuts a piece for Bruce, and it's a little bigger than Karen's. Right? And then Scott gets, she's making up for it because she wants only a fourth of the thing gone, so she cuts a thin piece for Scott and puts it in front of him. Now is everybody happy? You got one that's joyful. Right, Bruce is happy because he got the big piece. Karen was content until she saw Bruce's piece. Now she's unhappy. And Scott, well, Scott's going to go out and blow something up. That's what he would do, right? That's how it worked. So you see this thing of comparison brings this really, really negative factor into our ability to be content. So let me ask you a question. Do you ever feel like God's giving somebody else a bigger piece of the cake? Can you think of an example that you can share? No, man, look, let's help each other. This is real life, right? Yeah, it's almost like they win the lottery. You've been working, 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 and then something gets dropped in their laps. You try to do it the right way. You try to live a moral life. You try to be honest at work. You try to do and the guy that's dishonest at work, he gets the boss's favor. The kiss, foot kisser, he gets the promotion. Right? Please, Leah, go ahead.
My sister, one of my sisters is 15 years older than me.
Okay, she's 15 years older than you, your sister.
Yes, so she went to college, obviously, a long time before me.
Yeah.
And when she went to college, our parents didn't make that much money, so she got grants to go to college for free.
Oh, she got the Pell Grants and all the financial aid, and so it didn't cost her anything. And how long did it take you to pay off your student loans?
I'm still paying on them.
Still paying on them. Still paying on them. See, and that's reality. So when you watched her go through school, you thought, "That's awesome! I'm going to go to school. The government's going to pay for it. I'm going to have all these things." And yeah, that's not what happened. So sometimes it seems. Yeah, Ben, go ahead.
Well, let's think of something here written that we could interject ourselves in the scenario. Say Elijah, and I call him Elisha.
Elisha, yeah.
I like to pronounce things the way they're written. Like a normal human being.
I think he just... Did you feel that? I felt that.
The Lord chose to, take Elijah up.
Yep. And what did he give Elisha?
His purpose
Yeah.
Here you go. He says, well, you ask a hard thing, but if you're with me, then you can have it. So he ends up with a double portion of the Spirit. He does way more than
yeah. a lot of, lot more miracles. Double portion of the Spirit. That's what it'll, that's what he asked for. And he got it. But he did get to kill a bunch of children with a bear, a couple of bears.
Well, he didn't.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah.
You know, if you have a double point, you know, in that situation, man, I got double what he had.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm ever going to, you know, be put in a grave.
Okay. Oh, okay. So his expectations could have been totally different. Yeah, so he, you know, Elijah could have looked at that and said, well, man, he didn't do, he, no, I had to work hard for what I, you know, I had to, I studied, you know, I paid for my school, you got to come along for free. Yeah, he could have done that, right? So that's kind of, you see how this comparison thing, you know, it does, it creeps into our lives, doesn't it? Siblings, you know, children do this, siblings do this, co-workers do this, Doug? Okay.
So I give somebody a price of $300 to paint a room. Right?
Okay.
So in their mind, you're thinking, I'll price
deal.
$8. So
yeah.
You get the guy with the right tools, the right
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he does it in 2.5 hours.
Right.
Then
they
have a hard time paying. Well, he paid like $100 or something.
Okay. Yeah, they don't realize Keith paid $5,000 for the machine that he uses to get it done that fast. Yeah, they don't think about that. The tools involved and yeah, that is, you're right. See, so it goes both ways, right? On both ends, we can mess ourselves up. So let's kind of take a look at what should we do if we feel discontent? All right. So where does God want us to come down on all of this? Let me give you a couple of things here real quick because we're going to about run out of time. We'll look at a couple of verses here. So number one, I think we need to be asking ourselves, what is a reasonable expectation? What is a reasonable expectation? You know, and I get that from Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 22. Notice this verse, Proverbs 15 verse 22. Without counsel, purposes are, look at the next word, disappointed. Disappointed. So what this verse is saying, without counsel, without asking other people's opinion, right? So, you know, honestly, if I were going to pay somebody to paint my house, I'd be saying, Keith, what would you charge for this? What do you think is a reasonable thing? You ask people who know. I'd be called, Doug, what do you think is reasonable to pay somebody to paint, you know, three rooms of a house and all that? So when we do that, then we can set a reasonable expectation. Right? So we have to start. Look, we will never have the chance to be content unless we first get our expectations right. So our children's behavior, okay? What can you expect out of children? Well, I think in our world today, they're being sold short in general. I think children can behave and learn a lot more than people give them credit for. I think parents have become very, very lax, and I love being able to say that now that I no longer have small children. So, but I think that's true. Nevertheless, there is a level of reasonable thing. And is that the same for each child? Children are different, aren't they? Do children deserve to be looked at as individuals and say, this is reasonable for this child, this is reasonable for this child? Absolutely. That's a tough thing to do, but I think that's a fair thing. That gets to my point number four, if I can get through this, or point number three and get to it. But so really what God is saying is, look, if you are not sure, if you're not an expert in some area, you need to ask some good people before you set your expectation levels. You need to ask some people. You know, before I would leave a church, I would go and sit down with people like Bill and Tana Fowler and ask them, are my expectations reasonable? You know, now again, there's nothing going on right now. Don't think that there's somebody doing that. I'm just using that as an example. People do that. But I would sit down with somebody who knows and say, look, where am I at in this? If you've got a child issue, you've got a work issue. Look, if you've got a work issue, I would talk to somebody who's worked. You know, look, I'd go talk to Billy because Billy's a boss. You can say, I got a problem with my boss. You go to talk to Billy. Billy can speak from a boss's perspective and help you realize whether or not your expectations are right. Because if your expectations are messed up, you have no chance to be content. If your expectations of your boss are up here and he has to be perfect, guess what? The best you can do is be content, and that's not going to happen, so you're going to be disappointed. And honestly, I live my life listening to certain people who are always disappointed in somebody. Look, I'm just being honest with you. They're always disappointed in somebody. They're always disappointed in their kids, always disappointed in their parents, always disappointed in their friends, always disappointed in their pastor, always disappointed in their church family, always disappointed in their workplace. Nobody meets their expectations. Well, guess what the common denominator is, dummy? Yeah. So we got to look at ourselves and say, my expectations aren't right. Hey, every spouse needs to look at their spouse and say, what are reasonable expectations? Because there are some people, their expectations of their spouses are way out of sight. You know, I've told you that before. I've used illustrations before about that. I've had men come in and say to me, you know, well, my wife just doesn't take care of herself, and you know, she just doesn't look good anymore, and I'm not attracted to her anymore. And I said, dude, take your shirt off and stand in front of a mirror. Because you're not doing any better than her. I can assure you, you won't do any better. In fact, you won't do that well. you got some kind of funky glasses on. I don't know how you see yourself, but I'm a guy and I can see that you're ugly. So get some counsel. Make sure we're being reasonable. Number two, don't get tempted by comparisons. This is all we're going to do, but I got to show you this verse. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12. This is the Apostle Paul. If you don't want to listen to me, listen to him. Paul said, we dare not make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves. In other words, basically what he's saying is, don't be like those idiots that look at themselves and compare themselves by their strengths compared to somebody else's weakness. Okay? He said, don't do that. You're going to think too much of yourself. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, look at the last three words, are not wise. See, if I'm going to compare myself to somebody, I have to pick an area of comparison, right? Where am I going to pick their... Well, I'm going to compare myself to Doug, and I'm going to see who knows the most Bible. It's not like I'm going to pick it on singing ability or good look. Well, that's a toss-up, maybe. Look, I'm not going to pick something that he's obviously better than I am in and say, I'm going to compare us. No, I'm going to pick the things that I'm good at. I'm going to pick the things that I think I'm good at, that I think are my strengths. And that's where he said that is so unwise. He also said it's unwise to compare yourself about anything. Don't ask your coworkers what they make. You know, don't compare, you know, or you could just, or be like golfers. All right, we're going to close on this, John. If that's going to be that way, if you're going to do that, be like golfers and just understand all golfers are liars. How'd you shoot? Eh, I shot an 81. Yeah, I shot an 80. Well, I said 81. I meant 79. That was 81 was last week. Yeah, they're all liars. You know, they've all got, you know, the right, what's this, John? That's a toe putt, right? He hit it in the weeds, but he's not going to hit it out of the weeds. So be like that. You know, if you want to be like that, that's fine. Understand that if you're going to make a comparison with somebody, just assume they're lying. Okay? And don't believe that. You know, a foot wedge, yeah. So look, Paul said it's just not wise. You know, the other couple things, let me just give you these because we're not going to come back to this. Realize that just and equal are not the same. Just and equal are not the same. God is just. God is always just. God does not treat everybody equally. Right? He does not treat everybody equally. He gives to those who work hard, he gives them more sometimes. You know, and that's just. It's not equal. That's what Tom struggled with earlier. He felt like just had to be equal. Or that equal wasn't just, you know, in that case. But you see how it can go the other way around. And then guard your thoughts. I would encourage you to read Philippians 4:8. That's where the Apostle Paul said, look, here's what I do. He said, whatsoever things are good, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are pure, all those great qualities, he said, think about those things. Don't think about all the stuff you hear on the news. Don't think about all this negative junk. He said, think about those good things, and you will learn to be content. All right, anybody have a comment or question before we go?